Number one, Star Wars. Number two, comics. Number three, Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit. Number four, Mario. Number five, Weird Al. Number six, Batman. Number seven, Kal-El. Number eight, The Simpsons. Number nine, TV. Number ten, every single band that I stole all their MP3s, but before they all sold out. Say it all together if you're with me now. Nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything. Say nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything.
Say hey, everybody. Welcome back to Nerds Ruin Everything. I'm Logan.
And I'm Adam.
And the plan had been to simply just talk about television, but Kevin Feige had other ideas and was like, I have to drop this so that Logan and Adam will talk about it on the podcast.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. It just like odd, really odd timing. Like it felt very, I mean, I have thoughts, but like, it just was a really weird. Like, it was just like, okay.
So I'm pretty sure I know why. 15 years ago, this would have been, we are premiering the trailer at Hall H at Comic-Con. But, like, media being what it is and leaks impossible to contain at this point. It was just like, we got to put the trailer out before Comic-Con. I still think like the hype would be better coming off of like Comic-Con and then premiering the trailer, but what do I know? It still got massive hits. Of course, it's the second most watched thing on YouTube ever. I think the Spider-Man trailer is actually the first. So
And then like, you know, the tickets went on sale at the same time and shut down AMC. Just like The Odyssey had, just like Spider-Man had, just like Dune 3 had. Oh, no, Dune 3 hasn't dropped their ticket sales yet.
Can I take a brief, like, just a brief aside about the Odyssey stuff? Like,
yeah,
I'm on social media too much, mostly Facebook, but like
the worst social media.
The take on Elliot Page and why he is in the Odyssey from a certain subset of people is insane to me, because Elliot Page has a working history with Christopher Nolan.
Yeah.
And Christopher Nolan constantly, he is that director. He casts the people he's worked with before. Like, so much so that I think we were all a little, like, I know he's worked he's worked with Damon before, right? Yeah, Damon was in Interstellar.
We thought
that's right. He's in Oppenheimer. But like, I when the Odyssey was like first coming, I was like, oh, it's going to be Christian Bale as Odysseus, but it wasn't. No. But anyway, Nolan works with people he's worked with before. Like, period. Like, sometimes he brings new people into the fold. Tenet was that, but then those people become part of his troupe. So that take is mind-blowing to me. And it's being, like, you know, spun by, you know, King Dipshit himself Twitter. It's fucking fascinating. And then I've seen this other, like, backlash about how there are only 25 theaters in the country or whatever that are showing the Odyssey in, quote, the format it was intended, which I've seen, like, the comparisons. I don't think you're losing much. Like, it's not like they're cutting off performances. You're cutting off, like the visual of it, if you're seeing it in a regular theater. And you're not losing the meat of the thing, but this idea that somehow you're owed an IMAX in every fucking major city so that you can see this the way it was filmed, like, from a certain set of people, is mind-boggling to me, because not 60 years ago, which I know is a long time, but you couldn't even see movies, man.
Yeah.
Like, well, what the fuck are you talking about?
Exactly. Like, well, like, okay. So
you had to wait. You just had to wait. Yeah. If you missed it, you just had to wait. You just had to wait. Welcome to the fucking show. It's mind boggling to me.
And that's what I don't understand. It's like it. It's the squeaky wheel makes the most noise, right?
Like, yeah, the internet is like, that's the problem, is it amplifies the squeaky wheel. It's an echo chamber. But yeah. I just seeing people like, it's bullshit that I would have to travel, you know, to two states over just to see this in this kind of format. I'm like, people used to have to travel to see a movie at all, man.
Yeah.
It's a miracle that you can drive fucking 5 miles from your house and just watch a movie in a theater. What are you talking about? Anyway, back to the Avengers Doomsday trailer, which dropped this week. And we have not discussed it other than I was like, I'm so excited. And you were like, I have thoughts. Yeah. So I want to know what your thoughts about all of it are.
I'm a little concerned. I'm actually more than a little concerned. I'm very concerned. I've watched it like 7 times. Actually, that's not true. I watched it 10 times. Because like I had this weird sneaking this weird feeling when I first watched it, and then I watched it again. I watched it like 4 times in a row when it first came out, and then I was like, okay, let's give it some time, and then I'm gonna watch it on the big screen. And then I literally watched it like another 6 times on the big screen, like on my big like 85-inch, right? So the people know I have the nice YouTube. Like I pay for the nice YouTube so I can actually download things. And I downloaded the trailer in 4K. So it's not like I'm waiting for buffering. I literally am watching a downloaded uncompressed file of it. So I'm seeing it better than probably most of the people that are watching it.
Certainly better than me. I watch it on my phone.
And so, like,
so is it the visual stuff that you're worried about?
It's the visuals. It's the pandering, and most of all,
it was going to be pandering.
Once
they announced the Russos and RDJ, I was just like, oh, we are pandering. I'm just gonna roll with that.
It's not just Avengers, like all of the Avengers movies are pandering, right? Like that's fan service, right? Like we know that. But there was always been with trailers, there's been this like bit of excitement, and there's this kind of like, it wasn't lazy. And for the first time, I feel like what I saw was a very lazy trailer. And I don't know about that accent. I had Tropic Thunder like flashbacks. I'm like, what the fuck's going on here? It's not to say I'm not excited. I am excited. Like, be able to see these characters share occupy space that people that we've never seen in live action occupy space together. But man, like, you couldn't film not on the volume. You couldn't film anywhere except for the volume and wide open spaces. Like, I don't know. I mean, I'd like to hear your thought. Like, that's ultimately what my thing is that I watched it multiple times hoping to God that I would change my mind and get super excited. But I was just like, I'm concerned because it's just crass pandering. And then it's just like, it feels like an extension of those little blips that they tried to sell us.
Oh, absolutely. 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 I'm a little, so here's the things I'm excited about. Mm-hmm. So the accent may or may not work. I'm going to have to hear it for more than 30 seconds.
30 seconds. Exactly.
But I'm excited that this is what seems to be Doom, not some version of Tony Stark. Now, we could still be wrong. I could still be wrong about that. But it does seem to be Doom.
Yeah, it does.
So, we'll see why he looks like you know, the MCU version of Tony Stark. Maybe, maybe not. I don't know.
Well, I mean, like, I think it can be very, very easily explained is that, like, so, like, you know how, like, we have the different Peter Parkers and they look different in different multiverses? I think right. that's basically what it's going to be explained as, is that...
Yeah, he just happens to look like
Tony.
Right.
Like, so. And, I mean, everything that we've seen from, like, leaked designs is that he has a very... Like, he doesn't have the Doom face, but he definitely has a lot of scarring.
Right. So,
and so, yeah.
That Doom is one of my favorite characters.
Mm-hmm.
Much like Thanos, like... the two of them can either be the baddest motherfuckers in the universe, or they're played for like goofy, stupid shit. It happens. But yeah. I do really love both of those characters. And like, I was excited for what they could have done with Kang, but that's, you know, whatever. That's water under the bridge now.
Yeah.
Even though I still think they could have just recasted Kang, but, I have a lot of hope for them getting Doom right. It's almost like secondary at this point if they do anything else right. For me, I just want them to get Doom right. And so that it's Doom is exciting. I think Thor in that moment like really worked for me. But actually, Thor as a character in the MCU, in the cinematic universe, has always really worked for me, even when the movies aren't that good. Like,
yeah.
Thor Love and Thunder is not a good movie, but Thor himself in that movie, like the armor withstanding, like Chris Hemsworth is a lot of fun in that movie. It's that the movie around him is not very good. Like in the first movie, well, actually, I think the first movie is better and people give it credit for. A second movie isn't that good, but he's really good in it. You know,
yeah.
he's got it. Like, whatever. So when he's giving that speech, like, I don't know, it really, like, gets me. Like, it pulls me in and I'm like, yeah, let's go, man. There's some stuff I'm worried about. Mostly I'm with you on the effect stuff. It is, I don't want to say early because we're less than 6 months away from the premiere.
But the whole thing is that they've been working on this for a year now.
Yeah.
They've been, no, more than a year. They've been working on the effects for close to 18 months now. Since before Fantastic Four. Like, and this is what, like, and also, like, here's the thing is that, I think that what also colored me, like, and I'm sorry, I'll let you finish up.
Go ahead.
No, what colored me was, did you read the article about how they, like, Marvel and Kevin Feige just basically said, well, you know, we're using AI because, you know, it was the new Disney CEO. Well, you know, Avengers Endgame is going to use a generative AI to help complete a special effects. You're just going to have to deal with it because they fucking fired all of their designers.
Yes.
And that left a really bad taste in my mouth, especially when like somebody like James Cameron says, no generative AI, fuck you. It's all created from like, so, like, the rumor is that this movie costs more, to get out the gate, not even PR, like, not even, like, advertising, is going to cost more than Star Wars The Force Awakens. Now, to give everybody an idea, Star Wars The Force Awakens, even with tax breaks, costs $600 million to complete. Now, when you watch that film and you go, where the hell did it go? Like, I really honestly want to know where it went. Like, did they really pay? Like, did they pay? Like, $400 million, I can understand. Like, if you had to pay $100 million to Harrison Ford, J.J. Abrams, and Carrie Fisher, or $150, I understand. Okay, that's fine. Whatever.
It also shot a lot on location. Lot of practical effects. But, like, you're saying, like, where did it go? But I problems with Force Awakens aside, I do think that movie looks really good.
It does. It does. But this movie is somewhere like somebody.
I'm with you. It costing more than that. Like, yes, it has a lot more star power in it, but costing getting more than The Force Awakens and looking
like worse
is not okay.
Yeah, I mean, I it looks like AI slop. Like, at first I was like, when I saw it run through on somebody's page, I laughed because it was like a section of it. I laughed and I thought, oh man, they're getting really good with this AI bullshit. And then the next social media thing post that I saw was fucking Marvel's page. And I was like, oh man. Okay, let's go ahead and go onto the computer and watch it on the computer. Like, you know, because I was scrolling on my phone, and then I watched it. I was like, why? Like, that's where my heart sank a little, because these are the Avenger films. Like Avengers 1 and 2, like, definitely have a grounded, like, yes, there is effects work. But, and this is something that I'm going to have to go back and watch, because I have my 4Ks of it all, right? I have every single film, like, I have all the Avengers films in 4K, right? Like, and I don't want to watch them on a stream. I really want to watch them on the 4K so I can actually see if this is just one of those things where I'm like, am I getting like the Mandela effect of it and going, you know what? No. Was it always effects heavy and they never filmed on location?
So I want to compare it to something, but it was okay. Something that was going to bring up a little bit later, but I guess I can bring it up now.
Yeah.
I texted you about, I think it was about 2 weeks ago. So I recently read all of the Scott Pilgrim graphic novels. So,
yeah.
And then after reading them, I decided to revisit Scott Pilgrim.
Yeah. The movie. I remember you saying that.
And so that movie is how old at this point?
It's 15 years old now.
15 years old.
Oh, wait, or is it 10? Maybe, is it 10 or 15? I'm going to check while you continue to talk.
All right. So that movie was made at least a decade ago, but I think you're right. I think it was 15 years
ago. It's 16, 2010.
16 years ago.
Yeah.
Okay. It looks like, problems with Scott, the character aside.
Yeah.
That movie looks fucking incredible, man.
Yes, it does.
And I watched it streaming off of bad Wi-Fi. It looks incredible.
And it cost only like, it cost like $75 to $80 million. Like,
and it also has a stellar cast, not star-studded. Yeah. But nerd star studded, like people that we would be like, including Chris Evans. It looks so fucking good.
Yep.
And I don't think you're wrong. I don't know that we, like, I won't say we, because we don't make movies.
Yeah.
I don't know that Hollywood knows how to do that anymore.
Except for Nolan.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ, except for Nolan.
Cameron.
But Cameron spends all of his money on, on the effects, right? Like, that, and he spends years doing it. Like, this movie is half the production time at the end of the day, because it took Cameron 6 years to make the next, like, it took him, like, a total of 6 production years from what I understand watching the documentaries. Like, you know, Fire and Ash and Way of Water both started at the same time, but essentially these movies take about half a decade for him to make, right? Whereas Doomsday effects work started like, you know, 2 years ago, like a year and a half ago, right? So anyways, and like continuing on, like, I see where your point is.
There's a lot of digital stuff in Scott Pilgrim.
Yes.
There's a lot of CGI effects work going on in there.
But isn't it assisted? Like, it has been a long time since I've seen the movie. But isn't it like there's still sets, there's still like locations, and it's just like assisted in the way.
That's what helps. Yeah. And like this idea of like everything, like the George Lucas, everything can be digital. Like, but even in that vein, like Phantom Menace looks so much better.
Dude, you're telling me, man, than anything right now, right?
I'll go past Phantom, like Attack of the Clones, I think actually has more digital like background stuff than Phantom Menace. I could be wrong. But like all of Coruscant is just basically digitally created. But it looks good. It doesn't look great, but it looks good. Like a lot of this stuff, to your point, just it doesn't look good. It's not going to age well at all.
No, okay. Here's the wild ass thing. Okay, like, so I may have got a ticket for my IMAX just to give them the box office guide, even though I didn't have the time, and maybe I went to go see the Dune 2 preview because you talked it up. So, and this is another contextual piece of information.
Seven minutes of that movie. And it looks fucking like incredible,
right? Man. I was gonna text you and go, how can you not want to go back and at least go watch Dune 1 and 2 after seeing Dune 3, the previews for seeing that 7-minute clip of
Dune 3. I mean, I kind of do, but like I'm also a little worried that like it's not gonna live up to that 7 minutes of that movie,
because
I told you, it's like the fucking storming the beach. And Saving Private Ryan, you're just like, holy shit, man, like, but you can, every time a bullet rips into
you can hear and feel it, man. Yeah. Well, okay, so I heard that in November, I'm going to tell you, like, you know, this was something also I was going to tell you, they're gonna have Dune 2, 1 and 2 re-release in IMAX.
That'll be nice.
Like, I think sometime in October. It's only gonna be like a 3-day thing, but you'll have to buy tickets in advance because it's like 3 days for one and 3 days for the other. But I would say, because I've seen them both in IMAX, I was lucky enough. So like the one thing I can say, like, the one thing that I never thought I would have to do is go and go, well, Denis Villeneuve in the Dune series, like, visually, they never have a problem with it feeling tactile the way that an Avengers MCU movie does. And having a comparative where I go, man, but you know what? If I'm really honest with you, like, as a theatrical experience, I think that I'm a little bit more excited for Dune after seeing that trailer. Like, they're working hard to convince me that the movie I should see for, I mean, I have an in with Warner Brothers, so I will probably end up seeing Dune before I see Avengers Doomsday. But, like, if I was somebody who went to see Nolan's Odyssey and saw the Dune 3 trailer, and then, like, just a regular schmo, and then saw the Avengers trailer, I don't know, man. Like, I'd be like, you know what? Give me my ticket for Dune 3 first. I'll go see that, and then I'll see Avengers. Like, I want to see Dune first because that's kind of got me hyped because, Jesus Christ, that looks huge, and it looks like cinema. Like, that stupid meme from fucking, what's his name, from Scorsese? Absolute cinema. Whereas, like, I literally, I don't know, man. Like, I hate saying this because I'm a Marvel head. We're both Marvel heads. We're going to talk about something that I'm serious. Like, we're going to talk about something in a minute or two that I am seriously in love with right now by the MCU. Like, Kevin Feige did something right, but he also did something, like, now I know why he's out there with Brand New Day talking so much shit about MCU in the way that he hasn't before, because I honestly think he's fucking worried. He's a little worried, and as he should be, because this is what happens when you hire, like, the Russos, like, believe. Okay. And correct me if I'm wrong. Oh, go ahead.
I honestly think if Kevin Feige were just the sole person running the show, none of this is the exact direction we would have gone in.
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not.
This is the result of a board of directors, a head of the company, like just people breathing down his neck and having to prove, like he does no longer have the goodwill to do something like Nolan or Cameron in a production from a production standpoint, and just take chances and people willing to just bet on that.
Or even Spielberg.
You're right.
Or even Scorsese. I mean, he used to be that kind of level, of showman, right? Like where
and
he
could to go. To be fair, those people do not have, at least in my opinion, don't have the, I hate to say failures, but let's just say failures. They don't have the failures that Kevin Feige has. Like,
Spielberg, I mean, 1941, Hook. I mean,
yeah, but like, you're going Hook back a ways. And ago. People, yeah, like, he doesn't like Hook. I know a lot of people that love Hook.
Yeah.
And I like me among them. Like, I don't think it's a great movie, but I have a fond affection for that movie.
I get what you're saying. And also he's a producer. He's not a director.
Right. There's not an Eternals on, well, maybe on Spielberg and Scorsese, but like, I don't think Nolan has an Eternals. I don't think Cameron has an Eternals. You know what I mean?
And
to me, that was the epitome of like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, for all the like TV show bullshit, the Eternals is the thing where I'm like, I think y'all have lost your way, man. And that was his one, like, we're going to do this, like, Guardians got it, so we're going to do it with Eternals. But like, it just wasn't there, man. That movie's just a mess. Like, narratively, it's a mess. So anyway, point being, like, To your point, like I don't think Feige's really running the show. He's answering and scrambling so that he still has a job and like some other people still have a job. You know, I think we're probably going to be seeing James Gunn do something similar. Although we got some good news on the Warner Brothers merger front this week.
Yes.
We don't have to get into it. It's probably still happening, but boy, did they take a hit.
Well, I mean, you read about it, and the Ellisons are circling and thinking that maybe it's not a good idea right now.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, it's not a good idea, and they may just drop because Daddy Ellison doesn't want to take the hit on the money.
Yeah.
Because of the amount of money that he's going to have to pony up just in legal fees to get this to push through. And then there's no guarantee that he can get it to push through by the end of the year, which he needs.
Yeah.
Anyways, neither here nor there. I was going to ask you something, which is kind of very interesting to me. Like, how do you... Okay, so here's my question. Is, like... this is the funniest thing to me. Is that at the end of the day... Like, you brought back the Russos, but in reality, like, and everybody, like, this is who the Russos are. Like, I don't think that this has not been a thing, right? We just, like, a lot of people forgave Endgame and Infinity War for the blue screen stuff because it was something that we'd never seen before, right?
Honestly, the character work is so good in the Russo's movies that it does make up for like some of the lacking special effects in both of those films,
like,
but also in the previous two films. You know, their two Captain America movies are phenomenal character pieces, and they're in the MCU at least have been really, really good at that specific thing, which is one of the things, like, did I want them to go this direction? Absolutely not. But it's the lane we're in. We can't switch. So I'm holding out hope that they know how to do these characters, at least. their own stuff, fucking whatever. But they seem to have a really good handle on character work in the MCU. So,
well, and like, I'm going to be honest with you. I think also the other problem is Waldron. Because it feels like the same problems that we had, the same problems I had with Fantastic Four seem to be like, and this may be completely off base because I'm going off of trailers and everything that we've heard, but then why is McFeely coming back? Like, they said that part of the reason why he's getting, like, Marcus and McFeely were working on something else for Marvel, from what I understood. But then they were brought in, or McFeely was brought in during the reshoot times and the extended delays to rewrite stuff. But these guys are the reason, these are the architects, right? These are the real architects, them and Zach Penn. And I hate to say it, but Joss Whedon were the real architects of the Avengers movies, right? Of the Endgame pieces, right? Like, they were, like, they were, for better or for worse, all of them put together were the ones who created this, like, you know, this end, the this line of, like, six movies, right? That end up, or five movies. But my question is this, is that, like, did you not have the script, like, at least on some kind of solid ground? Because the Russos don't work well unless you can plug and play them. They're TV directors. They're not, like, I hate to use this comparison, but I kept on thinking, Sean Levy would have never let this happen. How the fuck did I get here in 2026 where I'm saying Sean Levy would never let this happen?
That's the thing about directing TV, is that, like, you're coming in and directing something that's so, like, the people know what they're doing.
Yeah.
They know their characters. The script writers are there because they're in the writer's room every week. So what you're being handed is consistent with the quality of the show itself. Whether the show's any good is beside the point, but it's consistent because it's being delivered by the same group of people over and over and over again. And so you're just in there to, you know, kind of, it's not even that you're captaining the ship. It's just like you're making sure that nothing goes off the rails.
Yeah.
You don't have to not saying you don't have to do anything, but it's that's the way the TV world mostly works.
Mm-hmm.
So it's why showrunners are such a big deal in television, as opposed to, like, the directors of the episodes themselves. And in movies, like, the directors do tend to have more power, but they're not, like, we've seen what they've done outside of the MCU.
Yeah.
And it's not great.
No.
So if the script is there, and on be honest, like, what we've seen, we don't know what this script is going to be like.
No.
So we can still kind of hope that the script is there. I think McFeely has done solid work in Marvel. I think
Waldron
has done solid. I mean, Loki is phenomenal beginning to end. Like, there's some, like, moments, but also, to be fair, that's a television show. But they've done good work with the MCU. So if the script is solid, special effects be damned, and the Russos can do characters, like, I have a lot of hope for it. But I do agree with you. Like, all of this ultimately, I do agree with you that, like, it's a little bothersome that the effects work is so meh. Like,
yeah,
and we haven't seen much. They still have a few months to try to, like, better some of it, but shooting on the volume means you're only ever going to get, like, a certain level, because you're not adding effects work. You're it's already just digital background, so, like, it just becomes nonsense, a hat on a hat. So
yeah, no, you're absolutely right. But then also, like, I don't know, man. Like, I'm just like, are we just gonna see these guys like the X-Men show up for 5 minutes and then they die?
I hope not. I really, really hope not. For some of them, I also think it's really telling that Hugh Jackman is not in this fucking trailer.
Yeah,
like we know he's in the movie. Like, why isn't he in the trailer?
Because he probably shows up at the end with Toby Spider-Man or somebody else, and hey, we're here to help. You know, because we've also heard that we've also heard that that what's his name is not in this one. One of the key factors and we'll end fairly soon, because we're talking we always make mountains out of this stuff, but like Peter's not in it. Peter Spider-Man's not in this trailer at all, and we've heard that he is not in this movie yet. He is in it. He'll
probably be in the next one.
But he will be in the
next one. That'll be the bigger showcase. Yeah.
Exactly. So, but also something that we've heard that they've also been teasing now that the press are being done and like, you know, they've hinted at something happens in Brand New Day at the end that recontextualizes everything. Now, it could just be the Jean Grey of it all. Which I'll be very mad if they spend the whole entire movie skipping around Jean Grey not being Jean Grey. Let's be honest. Like, she's Jean Grey, right? Like there's like a good, it's like a 90%, 99% probability. Like, it's like, it's, they've done
I much. I hope it isn't, because it's a weird way to introduce an X-Men character,
but as a villain or as somebody who, like, is already uncontrolled, like, I mean, but then here's the thing, is that it's unchecked, her power is unchecked, right? It would
which means the Dark Phoenix this will be the third fucking time we've got this.
I know, like, bro, I know, like
it's not that I don't have faith that they can do it better justice than the previous two times. It's just that it will be the third time cinematically we've gotten the story. We also got it in the X-Men cartoon. Like, we've seen the Dark Phoenix story so many. It's the death of Uncle Ben and the fucking like exploding of Krypton and Bruce Wayne's parents getting shot in the alley. It's like, God, how many times do I have to watch this?
Martha? Why'd you say Martha? I don't know, man. Like, but it's also tropes, right? Like, they know that people, like, here's the thing, is that we've been alive long enough to, like, I mean, to have seen this, right? Other kids that are growing up on Spider-Man that are now, like, they've not seen it proper, right? Like, I mean, we had, like, for better or for worse, like, I really do hate that Last Stand stupidity. That is the one of the worst X-Men movies, and that's saying a lot, because there are a lot of bad ones. And then also, what's the one that they just did that was like literally 4 years ago?
Dark Phoenix.
Was it called Dark Phoenix? Jesus Christ! With Sophie Turner?
Pretty sure. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm like, all right, bro, let her rest. Let her rest. But also, like, Sadie Sink is a phenomenal talent, and I understand, but also, like, why not just make her Mayday? Like, like a multiverse Mayday. Like, I don't know. It's wild to me. I'm very excited about the movie. Like, I'm very, very excited about Brand New Day. I'm not going to lie to you. I'm more excited about that than I am about Doomsday, but there are a lot more things that I'm excited about than Doomsday. And it's just, it sucks, because I want to be as hyped as I was for Infinity War and for Endgame.
Well, it's also been, it's been floundering since Endgame.
Yeah.
Like, the only true high spots have been the Spider-Man films. But a couple of, you know, decent things. But
I mean, Shang-Chi is pretty badass. And, like, thank God.
Shang-Chi's good. Thunderbolts was really good.
Good, yep.
Not seen by enough people. It was really good. But mostly it's just been, like, okay to not good. Like, there's not been anything that's like, oh, holy shit. So it's a little, it is concerning. But anyway, that's 40 minutes on the X-Men trailer with some asides here and there. All right, so...
Not the X-Men, Doomsday, but we're just about to...
It might as well be the X-Men.
Yeah.
Before we get to the X-Men, though, just 5 minutes.
Okay.
I did something Monday. Steph and I did something Monday that, like... 25-year-old me would have been like, fuck no, I'm not going to see a movie. I don't know what it is. AMC does this thing called Screen Unseen,
yep,
where every Monday you can go see a movie. They only tell you what the rating and the length of the movie is. And you just sit there and be surprised by what the movie is. We decided to do it. Seemed like a fun idea. We knew it was going to be a rated R movie and it was going to be less than 2 hours. So I was like, okay. It was the premiere, I guess, for lack of a better word, of Motor City, starring Alan Ritchson.
I'm very curious about this movie. So, because it's dialogue-less, like it's a dialogue-less
revenge. So you do know that.
Yeah.
Okay. So I did not know that.
Oh.
It was 20 minutes into the movie when I was just like, so it's just nobody gonna talk? And like, it's not good.
Oh, man. That you is might, disappointing.
Adam, you might watch it and really enjoy it. But
I don't know, man. Like,
not having dialogue. I'm not saying it needed a shit ton of dialogue.
Yeah.
Not like it gets to a point where they go out of their way to make it so people are talking, but they do things so it's you can't hear the conversations.
Yeah,
and it's a little frustrating because like characters do things and you do not understand their motivations. You don't understand where information is coming from. So it makes it a little too messy. There is some effects work at the beginning and the end of the movie that is absolutely hard. Like, there is, it opens with him throwing a body off of a rooftop onto the hood of a car, which should be like, that's something you would have seen in the 80s, and it would have just been like, okay, like,
let's
that's,
go.
Yeah, that's badass. It's so bad.
Huh. Well, okay, so, oh, man. Like,
none of it looked real. Like, I was just like, I get it's cheaper than paying stuntmen, but, like, it looks horrible. So, why? Just don't fucking do it, man. And there is, there is a thing at the end that's practical effects that everyone in my theater laughed. So,
oh wow,
it was not good. There's a lot of great needle drops, but unfortunately, it's a lot of like 5 or 6 minute, like, okay, this is pretty good, and then 10 minutes of like, oh my god, I would have watched this thing on fast forward if I'd have watched it at home. You may have a completely different experience, mm-hmm. Alan Ritchson. Isn't bad, but like nobody in the movie is bad, but it's this like pretentious idea of making a movie ruining what could have been a pretty decent like throwback 70s revenge flick, because it has all of the parts.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, a director, writer, stars, whoever's like producers being like, yeah, you know what, Ted Sarandos says we have to restate the plot of a movie like multiple times because people watch it passively. What if we make a movie that they can't watch passively because we never say anything? And it just doesn't work, man. Like, we also saw the trailer for the new Nicholas Winding Refn movie, which looks batshit.
I've actually seen it.
Oh, really?
So it is.
I mean, it's him, right? It's either it's, like So it's either wild and good or wild and like, what the fuck was that?
So I don't think I'm going to review it because I don't know how to review it. Because to be quite honest, I watched it stunned. My mouth was agape because it's intentionally arch and bad, but he is so obsessed with neon and visuals that like, and like, okay, so like,
that was part of the problem with the last one, right? Though yes, the one in Tokyo or whatever.
Yeah. And like
it's like, I get it, man. You like neon lights.
Jesus Christ. I don't even know how to, like, it is undescribable. Like, he is making a movie. Okay, so like, he's making a movie. How can I put this to you? He's making a movie that is inspired by an Italian movie that never existed that doesn't make sense.
Well, the reason I brought all that up was because of, like, not just seeing that trailer, but
yeah.
Drive is a movie that features, I don't want to say little dialogue, because it's just little dialogue from the guy that's starring in the movie, but there's long stretches of that movie where nobody talks, and it works. You can follow the you can follow it, but only in the like basis sense. Like the whole time you're just sitting there going like, but why is he doing this? Why is he doing that? Why isn't like, there's no cohesion.
No, and there's absolutely not. It's just
this artistic flair. For we're going to make a dialogue-free movie. And I don't know. If you get a chance to see it, I'd be really, really interested. I would tell you don't pay money to see this movie, but that's just me. And that's Motor City. It actually comes out this weekend. I think it's wide release is this weekend. I guess it was in limited release or something. Don't go see it. So, all right, let's talk some TV shows.
Yes, absolutely. Let's go ahead and do that. Since we were talking about the Avengers, let's talk about X-Men 97 season 2, which, I mean, I don't know about you, but I'm in fucking love with. Like, it's doing
so much fun, man.
Right?
It's just fun. It's a little hokey, but like season one was hokey. We got to get you back to the 90s thing that they
my god,
like, just beat themselves over the head with is a little like, okay, you don't have to be so specific, but there's some stuff in the in Sabanur like arc when they're in ancient Egypt where I'm like, are they really gonna like cross the line with Magneto and Xavier? Like, I don't want to say cross the line, because I'm one of the like people who would be online talking about like, why haven't they just made these people, like, these characters are gay, they're in love with each other,
yeah,
they're gay, and nobody will just put that out there, like, no, they just won't do it.
They won't.
But I'm like, is the show going to do it? Because that would be amazing. Because their separation and that is fucking, dude. I was like, they're going to kiss.
It's also like, man, it's just, it's really good because it is really highly coded to be LGBTQ. But I mean, that's just the way that it, like, this is what happens when you do things right and you're free of like allowed to write bold adaptations, right? And what I love about this season two is they decided to change it up, and the biggest trope that I hate, but they found a way for me to love it, is let's break up the band in season two. I fucking hate that, but they found a way to make me love it, because let's break up the band, but let's give them all side bands. And so instead of, like, you know, like I'm not I'm not mad at all of this because they break up and like I don't get the teams. I get all of the X teams. I'm getting all the X teams that I love. Like, it's not just X-Force, it's Team X. It's Excalibur, or what's the one, the government agency? X-Factor.
X-Factor,
like,
yeah.
It's X-Factor, and it's like comic visual, like, perfection, but also character perfection. Like, I never thought I would see Maverick in an animated form, much less a live action form, much less an animated form. But to have him be the chicken shit, like, coward he is in the comic, like the tough guy that he is in like, you know, the tough, like the big mouth that he is kind of like, that's the thing that I love, because that was my prime era of comics. Like, and if you're gonna do this, adapt it at least somewhat close to what, like, I don't need a one-to-one, but I definitely need, like, the inspiration and the spirit there. And that's what I feel like they're doing. And it's like, X-Men 97 is, like, a love letter to not just the animated series, but it's like a love letter to 90s comics in the best way possible.
Really just X-Men comics in general, but yeah, specifically that period. But like, to comics, X-Men comics in general, yeah. There's a character that shows up for like 2 seconds as one of Apocalypse's horsemen, and his name is, he's Famine. The Horseman Famine.
Oh, but okay, yeah.
The character's name is Jeb Lee, and he is a Confederate soldier that plays a drum, and it's such a... This character came from Rick Remender's run on X-Force, Uncanny X-Force, in the, like, early 2000s, and it is a ridiculous concept that only kind of sort of works in comics. And the fact that you're like, no, let's put Jeb Lee in there and make him one of the horsemen, because that's a fun concept. Let's see if it works. And you just do shit like that. Like, even if it's like throwaway stuff, it's just so much fun to see what they bring in every week.
Yeah. Like I told you, like we had texted when it started, and like I hated the fact that A Force to Be Reckoned With and the title sequence for that got ruined for you.
Yeah,
like
yeah, it's all right though. Like I was still hyped for it. I will say this, I'm glad some of that got ruined, because if I hadn't have known the hype. How hyped I would have been when that intro started, the episode would have let me down, because it is predominantly just not actual X-Force characters.
No, it's a Jubilee-centric episode. Like, it very much so is Jubilee. Yeah. She just happens to be tagging along with the first iteration of X-Force, right? Like I.
Well, it's not the OG. It's the show's iteration of X-Force. Like, the OG, yeah. X-Force is, it's Cannonball, it's Cable. Yeah. Sunspot is there, but there's no Psylocke, there's no Archangel. It's more like Rick Remender's X-Force was,
yes,
more like this.
Yes.
You know, it's not the, like, band of young, like, new mutants that Cable, like, recruits to be soldiers. And so, like, it would have been a little bit of a letdown. Like, I'm not gatekeeping X-Force. Like, I've liked a lot of iterations of X-Force, but to me, my X-Force group is always those kids that follow Cable.
And it's the New Mutants. Like, it's like New Mutants, like 90 to, I think it was 101 before they turned into X-Force.
It's 100.
It it's ends 100, at issue 100. Yeah, 100, and then and turns into X-Force.
Number one, yeah, launched like 3 months later. And
yeah.
X-Force was the book that got me into comics heavy. Cable is the character, like X-Force number 8, like this time-traveling dude who like knew all this stuff about the X-Men. Like, what the hell is this, you know? Like, that really, really brought me into comics big time. So I have a very big affinity for Cable as a character, which is enough to get me. Like, I love him in this show. I love what he is part of this show. And certainly with the Apocalypse stuff, he's going to be a big part of this season. We're both behind... we didn't watch the newest episode, which is, I think it's about Danger, which is a early, late 90s, early 2000 concept of like the Danger Room being sentient. But the episode before that was the Weapon X Lies and DVDs episode. Did you watch that one?
Oh yeah, no. That's why I was talking about Maverick, because like talk about like this was such a deep cut of an episode, like Dr. Cornelius, like the Omega Red, the Brood, like all of this stuff was so kind of like, and then they do the like my favorite part is they do the Wolverine fucking like they still managed to do all of like those little like in jokes from comic book
The ship in the first few X-Men movies where it's just like stuff just for the fans, you know.
Yep.
I did think it was a really fun episode, but ultimately it was just such a quick way to give him his adamantium back.
Yeah.
It really was kind of like that. That's a bummer that like, you're just using this as an excuse, because I actually would have liked to seen a flashback episode, like more in the vein of like, X-Men Origins.
Yeah.
You know, and done with some kind of like competency, because that movie is just fucking mess.
Terrible.
I mean, this 22 minute episode is still better than X-Men Origins Wolverine, so
yeah. I also think that this was maybe something that was rewritten after Bo DeMeo left, because it doesn't feel like Bo DeMeo
has an executive producer credit on this show.
Because I think from everything I've understood, he wrote like, they've rewritten a lot of it, but the bulk of it is why
season two came so much like, because we knew that there was a season two when season one premiered.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it was supposed to come out the next year.
Yeah.
Like,
and then all the stuff happened with Bo DeMeo, which we can like, there's still been a lot of like back and forth, and we can speculate on whatever, like, knowing what is out there, I kind of see both sides of.
I do, but also
still some stuff we probably don't know, though. You know,
I also think that it was a corporate decision.
Yeah, for sure.
Because if like they knew the kind of like it's really wild to think that like you're gonna act like. Like, all of a sudden, you're going to act like all, like, clutching your pearls about...
When you hired them, they're like, oh, hey, I have an OnlyFans.
Fans account. Like,
and they're like, okay, as long as you keep it at home.
Yeah. And, like, that was the thing, is that nobody... Like, there were no fans. Like, and this is the only thing I'm going to say. It's very wild to me that an X-Men show, like the producer of an X-Men show gets fired because of like moralistic stuff, because he runs an LGBTQ OnlyFans account. Like, that shit's wild. about a show that's coded about LGBTQ rights and just rights about minorities in general is fucking wild to me. That you fire a black man, a gay black man, because he's running an OnlyFans account.
That's the public reason. There's also a lot of like rumbling about some in office inappropriate stuff that may or may not have happened.
That is true. No one
specifically has stepped forward and spoken out about it. So it's all just a lot of speculation. That's why I say, like, I've heard like the public both sides of their, like, from what Disney has said and what Bo DeMeo has said. It's like, I can see both things, but I also still feel like something happened somewhere that nobody is willing to talk about.
Yeah. NDAs have been signed and stuff.
Yeah.
It has to be that. It can't be anything else.
All that aside, not even aside, you lost the showrunner.
Yep.
He was fired. You had to go back and retool a bunch of episodes for whatever reason. You delayed season two, and it's still coming in like fun, good episodes. And that's something. It's not something we expect from Marvel, because usually when it's like, we got to go back to the drawing board, what we get is like, oh, this is not good.
Yeah, this is not going to be good. But also, like, when you have good, strong writers, like, and they are allowed to dictate it, not some director, not some superstar, this is what happens. Yeah. I mean, and you guys can take it as what you want, but, you know, Robert Downey Jr., he brings a lot of baggage. Yeah. And I'm not going to say anything more because I love the guy, but also, like there was a reason why they hired him as Tony Stark initially.
Yeah, because he was Tony Stark.
He was Tony Stark, and also...
without the billionaire status. He was...
Yeah.
His personality is very much, you know, that character. While we're talking about animation, on the other side of the street, offices used to be across the street from each other in New York. Now neither one of them are going to be in New York because Marvel's moving to Burbank or something.
Yes.
Which is fucking depressing. But over on HBO Max, the new season of My Adventures with Superman has started. We're a few episodes in. I know this is this show that you didn't watch, right?
I watched the first couple of episodes. It's very, like, I liked it. I just didn't get back to it. It's very anime flavored. I liked it. It was very congenial. Like, it was very kind of like, it's what I like about Superman in animated form. It's bright. It's fun. It's very positive.
And this show continues to absolutely be that. Last season, they brought in Supergirl and did, like, what better versions of whatever they tried to do in the Supergirl movie. she is a phenomenal character. This season has opened after like two or three episodes. Clark has lost his powers.
Oh.
And so he is no longer Superman, and she is the like sole super person. And it's still just a lot of fun. Like, the characters are just dynamic. Jack Quaid is bizarrely one of the best Clark Kents we've ever had. He is so affable and lovable and just goofy, but also confident. Not so much when he lost his power. Like, that's his whole story now, is like he's lost. Like, he thinks he has no reason to, like, be, because he can't be Superman and everybody just loves Superman. Mm-hmm. So he's kind of like pushing everybody away. It still continues to be an extremely fun show that I really think James Gunn, intentionally or not, drew from a lot of this, because the stuff I love in this is the stuff I love about his Superman movie. And it's the stuff that was truly lacking in the Supergirl movie, I think. So,
yeah, that, like, there's a, like,
I think that he tried to do too hard of a turn with Supergirl. Like, it wasn't fun. And I know, like, so, like, there's this weird pushback on, like, I don't know if you've seen recently on social media, people are, like, talking about how the real reason why, like, the Brave and the Bold have been delayed. And I'm like, you know what? Suck a dick, you idiots. Because that's not the case. It's just, how do you find the right Batman, right? Like, that is the thing.
When there's like, already a Batman, like, that people are, you know, waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting for.
Exactly. Which
I get Gunn has to defend his directors, right? And his creatives. Yeah. And, like, good on you. Like, he did it with The Flash. Like, I get that that's what you have to do as, like, the head of this part of the studio. But, like, come on, man. Like, it's been 6 years. Well, not quite. It will have been 6 years.
It will be 6 years when it's released. I will almost... Okay, I saw the first one before I was 45, and I will be close to 50 when I see The Batman Part 2. But...
How many Nolan movies have we gotten in between?
Three. So, like, fucking three? Fuck, and then that's saying a lot. But also, like, okay.
I don't think it's not. It's only Oppenheimer and Odyssey, right?
But, I mean, that's, those are two massive movies.
Yeah, they're like, two big fucking movies. And you haven't been able to get, like, and it's not like your star doesn't want to work. Because this motherfucker will be in six movies this year alone.
Yeah. Like, but also, Pattinson hitting his
wants to work.
but also, he's hitting his stride. I mean, like, let's be honest, that dude is hitting his stride, right?
So the problem is Matt Reeves. Yeah. Matt Reeves is the problem.
Well, that too. So I'm gonna say there's nothing wrong with wanting perfection. Like, to be perfectly honest, like, I would much, like, if the Batman 2 is the equal or everything that we want from it and what was in the Penguin.
It will have been worth the wait. Yes.
It will have been worth the wait. And that's my thing, is that I've read all of the interviews, like, where he's given updates. And the thing is that he's saying the right things. He's saying that, like, you know, this, like, we did the same thing with with the first Batman, with the Batman. I was working this in my head for a long time. The fact that COVID came up and I had months and months and months to reconfigure the script was a blessing. And he's like, I didn't want to make a lesser Batman. I wanted to make the Godfather Part 2 to Godfather Part 1 to my Batman. And to me, if that's the case, then I'm okay. Like, I'm cool. I can wait. Like, let's be honest. We've had too many goddamn Batman movies anyways. I mean, like, we've had, like, this will be, what, the 10th Batman movie we have? Let's see. Batman 66, 89, Returns, Forever, Batman and Robin, Dark Knight, Batman Begins, Dark Knight Rises, The Batman. This will be the 10th.
I mean, if you count the Adam West movie, it's the 11th.
The 11th. 11 damn movies. 11 damn movies, man.
That's just live-action theatrical releases. That doesn't count the fucking 20 or so animated Batman films.
Exactly.
Which we're getting another one this year. So, anyway.
Yeah, Arkham, Nightfall.
Yeah. I didn't mean to get off on a tangent with Batman. So,
no, it's all good.
Anyway. My Adventures of Superman, absolutely wonderful show. If you liked the Superman live action movie, this is absolutely a show I think that people would enjoy. And since while we're still in the animated thing, very, very briefly, the reason I was going to bring up Scott Pilgrim is because after reading the graphic novels, I rewatched the movie, and then I finally sat down and watched the Scott Pilgrim, what's the show that's on Netflix?
It's Scott Pilgrim
Takes Off.
It takes off. Which,
have you seen it?
I've seen like half of it. So there's no spoilers about what happens at the end of episode.
I thought it was a continuation. I thought it was going to like, cause I knew it all came back. I was like, oh, so it's like another Scott Pilgrim story. And it is the Scott, it's like a what if version of Scott Pilgrim.
Yes.
And the reason it's called Scott Pilgrim Takes Off is because Scott Pilgrim is not in the fucking show.
Yes. Well, so like what I love about the show is that all of the criticisms that people have laid at the doorstep of Brian Lee O'Malley, him and Ben David Grabinski basically rewrite Scott Pilgrim versus the World as a, like, the show is a response. At least that's what I had remembered from the first four episodes. Like, everything is a response to that.
Absolutely is. It tries to address a lot of the, specifically, like, the Scott being, like, I get how everybody wants to just throw the, like, oh, he's a predator thing around to anybody. Scott's a young guy, and Knives is 17. Yeah. Like, is it a little fucking weird and icky? Absolutely. Rewatching the movie, I realized that the movie does kind of address it. Like, it does. Not in any real fashion, and the book kind of glosses over a lot of stuff too.
Oh,
but
the book totally glosses over.
There are a lot of people in the book and in the original movie who are like, Scott, you gotta break up with her. And Scott's like, they go out of their way in the book and somewhat in the movie to be like, they barely held hands. It's like the whole, she's my girlfriend because she said, do you want to be my boyfriend? And I was like, sure. Like, they don't kiss. They don't kiss in the movie until the end, right? Like,
yes.
And she, you know, she, I'm pretty sure it happens in the book too. She's like, go get her, go get her.
Yeah.
You know, why are you here? But anyway, all that Scott Pilgrim Takes Off is a lot of fun, especially if you like the world of Scott Pilgrim. All of the people that you love. Yeah, everybody comes back.
And there's new people that come in.
Yeah.
Like, did you realize who old Scott Pilgrim was?
No.
It was Will Forte.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
The old Scott Pilgrim stuff is really funny.
But I do love that Kieran plays old Wallace Wells too. Like, yes, he plays Wallace Wells and old Wallace Wells. Like, there's no difference. Like, and he's actually my favorite character. Like, like through the whole series. Like, even in the animated form.
In the books, he's great.
Oh, he's so great. Like so great. But anyways, continuing on. Sorry.
Yeah, it's a really fun story. It doesn't reach the highs of the movie. But this is, like, I actually, after, like I said, reading the graphic novels, I actually think the movie and this animated show are better than the source material. I know a lot of people will think that that's blasphemy, but no. I think they're more cohesive. And the source materials can be a little, like, all over the place, like reading somebody's kind of diary or something. These are more like narrative structures and you can follow the story. So, it's absolutely a blast. I love that literally, they were developing the show and, you know, basically had a conversation with, what's his name that directed the movie, and like to have him on as Edgar Wright. Like, he, you know, he's going to be a producer on the show. And he was like, I'll reach out to everybody, because apparently they have an email thread where they've just all more or less stayed in touch.
Yeah.
And he just put out an email into the thread and was like, we're doing this animated show. Would anybody like to voice their characters? And apparently, without fail, every single fucking person responded with yes. Like, it speaks to, you know, like just who they are, that they've remained in touch and friendly and all willing to come back and do this for, you know, practically nothing. I know that they had plans for a season two, and that got turned into a video game when the show did not get picked up, not play the game. But if you like Scott Pilgrim, it's a really fun, like, look at some of the more problematic things about the story of Scott Pilgrim.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It really does. Like, from what I remember, I think I watched half the episode. So if it was like a 12 episode season, I watched 6. Maybe even more, because I got to some of the in jokes.
Well, if you got the old Scott, that's like
6 or 7, right? Maybe.
Yeah, there's 8 episodes, so you watch
most of it. Okay. Yeah. All right. Yeah, I got to old Scott. So yeah, no, absolutely. Which I was genuinely shocked by, because he leaves so early in the show.
Yeah, that's obviously. Oh, Scott Pilgrim takes off.
Yeah,
because because he dies in the first episode. They're like, oh shit, you killed Scott.
And yeah, Matthew Patel kills him.
Yeah, like, I'm like, what happened?
Like, that's the funniest part. It's like, what? Wait, what?
I was like, oh, this is like a what if Scott didn't survive the first Evil X. And then you kind of get Ramona having to, like, recontextualize everything and, like, take more responsibility for her own life and not just be this damsel in distress. Response to, like, she becomes such a, like, side character in what should be her story in the film and in the books, where it's just like, oh, I'm powerless against this. And it is, like, kind of shitty, but also, like, kind of true. We see people act that way, like, in real life. So, anyway, yeah, it's a lot of fun. If you didn't finish it, like I said, there's only 8 episodes. Like, it's worth the finish. It was really fun, kind of like having basically a month of, like, just living in the Scott Pilgrim world. So
yeah, I did when I was watching the animated show, go back and read mine, because I had all of the graphic novels. And man, like, you are right, it is very troubling. It is very much like, Brian Lee O'Malley, did you really date a 17-year-old? Because Jesus Christ, this is like really. Like, it's not bad.
It's one of those things, though, where, like, if he's 32 and she's 28, it's not.
Yeah. But, I mean, yeah, like, okay, well, like, here's the thing, is that my wife is 8 years younger than me, right? So, like, I'm 48 and she just turned 40, right?
Yeah. We started me and Stephanie are in the same base.
Exactly. So
she's
like,
about to be 41 and I'm 47.
So. Exactly. So, like, when I started dating my wife, I was... like, she was 29 and I was, she was 29 and I was 37, right? But I would have never have dated her when she was 17 and I was 25. That's just fucking wrong, right? Like, at a certain, like, past 30, yes. A plus minus a decade does not make a difference, especially because guys have a tendency to age. Like, I think even she says it. I think even Knives says it. But, like, you know, men age a lot or mature a lot slower than women do, right? So, like,
yeah.
Like that decade. I mean, it's more than just you and I, dude. Like, there are, like, we have multiple couple friends.
My dad's wife is my stepmom is, decades younger than him.
See, so, there you go. I mean,
she's not much older than me. I'm 47. She might be 10 years older than me, 12 years older than me.
Okay.
Something like that. So,
but at that, like, once you hit that 30 marker, 30, I think, is the place where it becomes acceptable. Beforehand,
I think he's 21. Like, yeah, he's 21. And because he can't drink, he just doesn't.
Yeah, so. Exactly. But it's also like, it doesn't matter because she's underage, bro. She's underage. You could, like, so. But anywho, I did, like, that, like, I love that. I'm going to have to go back and finish it up. Did you? Okay, so I just wanted to briefly mention something. I don't know if you're. I know that. I think that we both had mentioned somewhere along the lines in our like decade of talking that we're both Michael Landon fans. I mentioned this because I had no idea that my wife was like a huge Little House on the Prairie fan. Had no idea.
I like Michael Landon. I've watched Little House on the Prairie, and it's not a show that, like, it's a show I can appreciate.
Yes.
It's never a show that I would be like, I'm going to watch Little House on. Although I do know that show has, like, I don't want to say cult because it was an extremely popular show
at the time, but our generation and the generation before us, it became a thing for them because it was on Nickelodeon. It was on Nick at Night. And so they just kind of watched it all the time, and it became like the Brady Bunch, a comfort food thing. At least that's what I was explained to me. All to mention that I watched the new iteration of Little House on the Prairie that just dropped on Netflix, and it's not bad. It's very kind of like my favorite part about it is I had to look and see who had created the show and adapted it, and it's one of the producers of The Boys, Rebecca Schoenshine. And my favorite part about it is, man, did she learn from Eric Kripke how to be correctly woke about things? And I hate using that word. You know I hate using that word. But it's a very progressive version of Little House on the Prairie because it's dealing with the Osage indigenous people, land grabs. But also it's weird because at the end of the day, I got kind of mad because I thought it was like the series proper. It's a prequel. They don't get to the part where Michael Landon is Michael Landon's until the very end. But it's like, I will say it's a lot of, it's actually like, if you don't mind like low stakes TV, it's kind of like, what I think that people that thought that 1823 or 1866 was too violent and they hate Taylor Sheridan, this is the show they should watch.
Unless Stephanie is a secret Little House fan, I doubt it'll ever land. It'll be on my, like, I've completely run out of things to watch. Just because, like I'm more apt to go back and just try to rewatch the original Little House. I do have one question, though. Uh-huh. Is her name Nellie? Is Nellie still, like, fuck that little girl? Like, and wasn't she the one that was always causing, like, problems?
It's actually, it's Nellie is just born when the show exists, like the show, like one of the like big episodes is like this Christmas episode where she's born. And so we don't get, and it is Nellie that always is constantly getting into trouble. So basically this takes place like 6 years before Little House on the Prairie.
Okay.
So like there's not as many kids, and it takes place in like Oklahoma before they go to Minnesota. So it's like a younger, like the family's a lot younger and stuff. And so like, it's like I said, it's very low stakes. It's beautifully shot, but there's not, like, there's like, it's not like if you're expecting a fucking Taylor Sheridan verse, a thing, like, good luck with that, bro. Go watch 1872 or 1499, whatever the fuck that show was again, my favorite thing. Watch Ed Harris complain about Taylor Sheridan and getting fucked over.
Pretty great.
It is pretty great.
I'm all for like lower stakes show, like. I think we need more. We've lost, everything's got to be so self-important, and we've kind of lost the like just looking at the IMDb listings, like the plot for the finale says Laura and Mary learn their parents are in debt and decide to win prize money at the town's first Founders Day celebration to help. Like, that's such low stakes, like, person. But it's, like, high stakes for the family, but it's not like, you know, we're saving the prairie. It's just, like, kids are going to try to win a, like, it's kind of like Bob's Burgers, right?
It really is.
It's only high stakes for the family. Like, there's no, like, super, and we need kind of more of that. Like, television has become just, like, another version of movies, and
yeah.
I kind of sort of hate it. To that point, a show that I started watching, I wasn't going to bring this up, but just as a like and antithetical to what you're saying about Little House, because it's based on a comic book that I haven't read. And I saw this week that all the actors were released from their contracts. I watched the first two or three episodes of The Beauty, the FX show from Ryan Murphy.
Oh, yeah.
With an absolutely stellar cast.
Yeah, Ashton Kutcher.
Yeah, what a fucking self-important, overindulgent kind. Like,
I thought it looked like...
The cast is phenomenal.
Yeah. It's
absolutely phenomenal. I would want to see a lot of these people do almost anything else that's not a Ryan Murphy show. And I don't hate Ryan Murphy, but like at this point, it's just become like just that much like Taylor Sheridan, where it's just like, yeah, I don't know, man, you're fucking everywhere, and everything you do looks overproduced and just, you know, has to, like, with Ryan Murphy, has to have this like sickening kind of quality to it.
Yeah, a disturbing, very gross, like, yeah, like it's like. He's like, it's almost like he saw Cronenberg movies and went, hold my beer. And it's just like,
it's trying to be so high stakes, which I they're pulling from the book. Like, I get it, but it's supposed to be kind of tongue in cheek and like goofy, like maybe not goofy, but like a little of that in the book, and like it just doesn't come off that way in the show. It comes off as like self-important,
yeah,
and just kind of like I said, like we're saving the world because somebody's assassinating all these like supermodels, and there's this drug that or something that disease that you can catch that makes you beautiful, like rearranges your entire body, but you can only live with it so long, and then it kills you. It's just kind of nonsense. I'll probably finish it, but like I watched the two or three episodes last week and have not had the desire to watch any of it on my vacation. So that's how much of an impact it made on me. There is one other show I want to briefly talk about, but I want to like, I know we brought up Widow's Bay before, but yes. You finally got to watch all of Widow's Bay, and you've talked a little bit about it, but, like, did I mislead you? Is it not the best fucking thing you've seen on television in a long time?
It's the show of the year so far. Like, at least to me. It is the show of the year. It's so, like, it invokes an anxiety that I didn't think that I could get, but also it is one of the scariest, but also heartbreaking, but also super funny shows. You know, it's weird because I think we've talked about this before, but I'm going to say it here. Apple's the best game in town. Like, yeah. I just watched the first two episodes of Lucky, and like, okay, so, like, you need to watch it because Oliphant's in it. And Oliphant is doing Oliphant things. But, like, for people that like crime shows, like, it works the same way that if horror is your niche for things, like, Widow's Bay is going to be your shit. It makes me excited, so I decided that I'm going to go back and watch For All Mankind because... alt history sci-fi from Ronald Moore, who did Battlestar Galactica. I'm like, how the fuck did I not watch this show? Because yeah. I'm sorry, but I'm now going to go back and at least give every single Apple show a shot.
You got to watch Maximum Pleasure Guaranteed, man.
Oh, I am. Like, it's on our... Well, Christina wants to watch that one because she's a huge Jake Johnson fan. So we're going to save that one until we're finished with a couple of other things. But, I mean, it's basically high on the list. We started a few things that we don't discuss. They're like cooking shows and stuff. So, but that's our low stakes stuff. But man, Widow's Bay. I was kind of familiar with Matthew Reese's game, but I'm sorry, Matthew Reese. Holy shit.
He's fucking great. Like, there's so few people I've ever seen toe the like scared out of their minds and also funny as shit. Like, he runs the gamut, and not even from like episode to episode, it's minute to minute, man.
Yes. Like, okay, so his scream alone should net him an Emmy. I know this sounds weird, and I know, go with me on this comp, but it really feels like it's the most grown-up complex version of Scooby-Doo that I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah. It's missing like a talking animal.
Well, yeah.
Like, you kind of almost get to that point when spoilers for Widow's Bay, because like even I was like, they're not gonna do that. But when you find out that fucking dude is still alive,
fucking Hamish Longlater.
He's so good. Like, if you haven't done a like deep dive on like them talking about him and that reveal, almost all of his dialogue is improvised. Almost all of it. Like on the boat when he's like eating, and like Matthew Reese has to fucking like hide because he cannot stop laughing.
Yeah.
Like, it's so fucking like creepy and funny, and like the flashback stuff really, really works. It's so moody and just like what the fuck is happening?
Yeah. The self-help book is one of my favorite things I've seen all year. And the reason why is
reveal for all that. Holy shit, man.
It makes so much sense. When you watch it, you go, oh fuck. That's why they keep on saying, why are you wearing that? And then my favorite part, the MVP of this fucking show, Dale Dickey, when she goes, well, I it was a look. I don't know. Gay, dead, dead, gay, dead. I was like, this show, like it could have only come from somebody who was a disciple of Michael Schur. Like, it makes complete sense. Like, Katie Diplo, like, it makes complete sense to me that Michael Schur continues to give to the universe in weird ways. Like, I know that a lot of people are like, oh, Simpsons, the Simpsons, shut up with the Simpsons. I'm tired of it. It's all about Schur and the guys from The Office and the guys in the guys and gals from Parks and Rec. Like, they are now creating some, like, most of the time, if it's something as special as Widow's Bay, you can probably guarantee that it's gonna come from somebody from either Parks and Rec or The Office. Yeah. It's like, I don't even need a second season, but I desperately want a second season
just to see what they can do. Like,
yeah.
And so the build up to like the reveal of the bloodline still existing.
Yes.
It's one of those things where it's like you can see that train wreck coming, right? You can see it. But you're just like, no, 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 like, no, you can't do that. You can't. And then it's just like, yeah, man, like, you're stuck here. You can never leave. Because your son can never leave.
Yep.
And like, it's gut, just, it's like a punch to the gut, man. Like, just, you feel so bad for this guy. And, but also you kind of don't like him at the same time. It's such a, like a whirlwind of just emotion and like, yeah, I there's not been anything like it on television in a very, very long time. Like it got a shit ton of like Emmy nominations, I think. So it'll be interesting to see like what it walks away with. So
yeah, I will be very surprised if it does get anything, but at the same time, if it wins everything, I will also not be surprised, right? Like, yeah. Like it's one of those things that I'm like, oh man, this is going to be very interesting how they deal with this. Like as a whole, like how this is going to work, with giving this show out, because like, it's so sincere in its execution and how it deals with its characters, but also it's like, make no mistake, it's a horror show. Like it is a horror show with a capital H, right? Like even the stuff between Matthew Reese's character and his assistant, right? Like, yeah. That's horror filled and so tension filled, but also very emotional and funny and scary, because it's like, you don't want him to do it, but you know, he needs to. But then when you realize everything that's happening, and that show got me, because at first, like, I looked at my wife and I was like, oh, it's the son. The son's the last of the bloodline. But then it convinces you that it's her, right?
Yeah.
And then when the gunshot goes off, I mean, it's just like, my favorite part about the show is that they think that they've solved everything.
Yeah.
They think that it worked. And the worst part is that Matthew Reese continues to be his character continues to be the worst, trying to convince himself that they solved the issue. But knowing full well they did not.
Yeah.
It is one of those things that I am very much, like you said, like I hope that it doesn't take 2 years like freaking or 3 years like what's the Severance took. I hope it's like next year or the year after. But I do not want to wait years for this.
No, absolutely not. And like, it did get nominated for a bunch of Emmys, including Del Dickey for Best Supporting Actress in a Comedy. So
fucking great in that.
It's a tough category, man. Supporting Actress in a Comedy at the Emmys, Jessica Williams in Shrinking, Megan Stalter in Hacks, Michelle Pfeiffer in Margo's Got Money Trouble, Kate O'Flynn also from Widow's Bay, Janelle James in Abbott Elementary, Hannah Einbender from Hacks, and Del Dickey from Widow's Bay. That's a murderer's row of like supporting performances.
And that because is,
I've seen all of those shows and they're all fucking phenomenal. So it's going to be, but like if they're ever going to give an award for like, just like, here's a like Lifetime Achievement Emmy Award, it should be Del Dickey. Like,
seriously,
because holy shit. Like, she's just great in everything. All right. So, the one thing I wanted to bring up very, very quickly, House of the Dragon is, I'm just going to say, on fucking fire, like pun intended. The show is so fucking good right now. I cannot explain it. I don't even know how it's as good as it is because
it's the last season, so they know they have to leave it on.
The last season,
yeah.
Have they actually said?
Yeah, they can't. The last season? Yeah, because
So there's a lot of drama that went on in season two and season three. And literally they were like, they were like, George was like, we end it this next season. So if you're going to do whatever you're going to do, do it now, because I'm sick of working with these people. Like the people that are working on this are not going to be working on the next whatever. It's the reason why the Jon Snow sequel got canceled, because it was such an egregious thing. Like how much back and forth. And I don't know what happened, but a lot of it had to do with them not taking notes from George seriously. And
there has to be a season four, because this is only season three.
No, they're ending with season four. I'm fairly certain that it's either this season or next season that they
it's gotta ending. Be next. It's gotta be next, because they don't have enough runway
to end this season. That's literally what the problem was with Game of Thrones.
Because this is season three. And we've only got, they don't have enough runway. There has to be a season four, because they've only got three episodes left.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. You know what? No, they, season four is premiering, next summer.
Okay.
And it's going to be the final, and it will be the final.
There's no way they can wrap this up in three episodes. Yeah. So it will be interesting to see if they stick the landing. It is so fucking good. Like, just I don't know, I heard a lot of shit before it premiered, because they sent out, I think, the first half of the season to, or maybe the entire season, to like legit critics, and a lot of it was like, yeah, it starts off strong and then it gets weak. And I'm like, we're five episodes in, when the fuck is it getting weak? It does start off strong with a huge battle, and it's phenomenal. But the character work in the last three episodes is so insanely good that, like, it's like the best soap opera you've ever fucking seen. I went from, like, even last year was a disappointment, or the last season, I mean, was a disappointment, because it was building up to the battle, and then it was just like, oh yeah, we only had eight episodes, sorry, come back next time. And that was frustrating. Like, I don't know what they could possibly do to leave. Like, I know it's going to end on a cliffhanger, but I don't think it's going to feel like last season. Like, it sucks that this show spent three seasons building these characters to only have two seasons to really pay off the work that they were doing. Mm-hmm. But, like, if the show had a 10-year commitment and been able to deliver a season every year, like, we could have built more. But honestly, man, like, it's fucking phenomenal. I cannot wait to see how they wrap all this up. I'm glad. I was like, you had me panicked. I was like, how the fuck are they going to wrap this up in three episodes? But it is so freaking good. Anyway, that was the only other show I watched it. I knew you didn't watch. If we got like 10 more minutes, I know there's one more show that we both watched.
Yeah, no, I've got 10.
Okay, then we have not. I don't think we brought it up at all, other than to say we watched it. The Bear had its final season.
Yes.
And we, like, even like texting, I don't think we've talked about. So I'm curious, like, what did you think of the last season of The Bear?
So I might be in the minority, but I loved this last season. I liked that they kind of did this hard reset and decided to make this like 3-hour long kind of Tony Scott love letter this love letter to Tony Scott, like where it was like a pressure cooker.
Yeah.
Let's do one day. And it felt like a movie. Like, it literally felt like a 3-hour movie. Like, if you had told me I could watch this with no commercials, no credits all the way through, and it would, like, I checked out, it's like 3.5 hours. Like, it would be like a Scorsese film nowadays, and I got to see it in IMAX. I would totally do this again. because that's how good it was to me. Like, and to end, like, the funniest part is that I had to go back and watch to make it not about, like, to make it not about Bear, to make it not about Carmine, and make it about everybody else, but specifically about the redemption of Richie, is my favorite thing. Like, I've never been so invested. I don't know about you, but the plane ride, the Say Anything plane ride at the end, man, I got kind of teary-eyed. I wanted to cheer. I wanted to go, fuck yeah, Richie, you fucking earned that. I don't know, man. Like, it was great to me. Like, it was like, it was from start to finish, top to bottom. Like, everything about it was kind of just wonderful.
Yeah. I enjoyed that it wasn't just Carmy. Like,
yes,
so much of the... I think, honestly, that's where the show falters a lot in other seasons, is that it was so focused on Carmy. And I get it. He's kind of the, like, main driving force. But honestly, the problem is you created a world of characters that are far more interesting than the guy you tapped to be your main character. Like, everybody else is so much more interesting. And, like, and they work great as a group. But, like, so that, so much so that when you just focus on Carmy, it, like, it's that that thing of, like, well, what is this person doing? What is that person doing? What, you know, like, I want to know what everybody's doing. And so the solution to that, like you said, is to have it be one day in this restaurant, one spectacularly bad day in this restaurant, and how these people get through it. And if you've ever worked in service, this it is so on point for, like, when the day is bad. Like, from the jump, you get there and everything's just wrong. Everybody's at each other's throats. And it's like, can you, like, still come together, reconcile all of that, and, like, deliver on the promise of, like, you know, the service. And, you know, I've never done anything like what they do. But Richie jumping through all the hoops he jumps through, like, not canceling any of the reservations and, like, coming up with these, like, half-assed solutions, like, having people watch the kitchen staff. It's like, it's such a circus of performing that, I'm with you. I don't think it's the best the show has ever done. It is a good out for the show, though. Like, I really, really enjoyed it.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's, I don't know, like you said, like, I don't think it was the best. I think that the best was probably season one. Like the original season, the original first season, or season two, were the best. But, man, what a way to go out. Like, a lot of times, like, and I liked the fact that it's like that everybody was meant to be where they were, including that Carmy should have never have been where he was.
Yeah.
I don't even think that Carmy is going to be, like, my read on it is that Carmy will never be happy, because he's like Mikey, in that he has that thing in him that will make him unhappy. He won't be able to be happy being a architect. Like, I just looked at it, I was like, that's bullshit. That's a bullshit run. Like, it's you destroyed, you literally destroyed, you almost destroyed, if it wasn't for Ibrahim, and if it wasn't for all the people around you, you would have destroyed, like, the beef. Like, you were the main architect for its destruction. And I'm not saying that it doesn't make for great TV, but if you look at it, like, he is a terrible human being and he doesn't deserve to be happy. And I'm glad that he understands that he shouldn't be calling his girl, his old school girl. He should actually get away as far as humanly possible, because everybody else, like, from Sydney to the facts to to Richie, especially Richie, they earned the right to be where they are, right? Yeah. And like Carmi just going and like the first thing is like I really like I love the fact that Richie gets to say what he gets to say to Carmi and like basically level every criticism that we've had about him at him. Yeah. You know, and even like also even like what's his name? Uncle yeah. doing the same thing. Like, but also it's like he shouldn't be there. Like he's like the we all have that relative, and we will they can remain nameless because I'm not gonna name the one that I know, but we all have a relative like Carmi. They don't like they are a type of personality that comes in and ruins everything. Like they just touch things and it just turns to shit. But yeah. But they are always loved by one person, and that person is usually the motherhead or the fatherhead. And you're just like, oh, why are you fucking here? Like you fucking ruin everything. Thanks for ruining it. But and I'm very curious as to what Christopher Storer is going to do next, because
he's doing an A24 movie.
Oh, he is?
Called Creature with Paul Rudd attached. I was just looking at that the other day. And disappointing. I don't know.
That's so disappointing. Like, I mean, like I like that sounds like it's going to be another Death of a Unicorn. That's great.
I like that movie. So.
I know you do, but I do not. I mean, it sounds like Death of Robin Hood, right? Or even like, so I had a couple of friends like that have told me that Tony is terrible. I was really looking forward to Tony.
That's rough, man.
It's terrible.
That trailer's so fucking good, though.
Well, I'm still
going to see it.
Yeah. So. They just said it's a mess. It's a mess. It doesn't know what movie it wants to be. It doesn't know Tony Bourdain. It just decides to tell this story that just like a fictional thing that doesn't make any sense. And it's just totally all over the place because it doesn't know what movie it wants to be. Sounds like an A24 joint.
Matt Johnson, right? Nirvana, the band, the show.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's disappointing. I'm still gonna see it. I'll judge from myself.
So. You should actually let everybody know about that because I knew that you were. I just haven't had a chance to watch the movie that's on Hulu now. I did want to wait until they're releasing a 4K of it in the UK, and I was thinking about purchasing it because that actually comes with the TV show.
Nice.
Yeah, but you should let everybody know.
Nirvana, the band, the show. The show, not the movie. The movie is streaming now, I think, right?
Yeah.
So the show premieres on Hulu this coming weekend. So by the time you're hearing this, it's probably up. I've never seen the show. I've only seen the movie. And I went into the movie not knowing really anything. And it's I don't want to say it's a phenomenal movie. It is a phenomenal execution of a story. And, like, I wish I'd seen the show because I feel like the movie would have meant more. So I'm excited to go back and watch episodes of the show. I got a lot more TV to catch up on because, like, King of the Hill is also back this week.
Yeah, and they dropped all their episodes.
Yeah, have not had a chance to watch a single bit of it. I'm excited for that. Excited to get into watching Nirvana, the band, the show next week. And, you know, Batman, the Caped Crusader is coming back for season two,
which
Steph and I just rewatched season one and man, that show is good. Like, I hate to give JJ Abrams any fucking thing at all, but that's a really good show. I'm excited for season two. We also just not binge watch, but we've been doing this thing where you go to the gym and work out for 30 minutes on like the treadmill or the elliptical or the Stairmaster or whatever. And we watch a show while we're doing it. We'll both watch the same show. So we got through My Adventures with Superman because she hadn't seen any of that. Batman the Caped Crusader, and we just finished Creature Commandos. So
I love Creature Commandos. Seen that.
Me too, man. Like, that show did not get enough love. It's so fucking good. And I think we're probably gonna do, she's only seen a little bit of Red versus Blue, and all of Red versus Blue is broken up into 22 minute chunks on Tubi.
Oh,
so I think we're gonna watch Red versus Blue starting probably next week. So anyway, yeah, I'm excited to watch Nirvana, the band, the show, the actual show. And you know, hopefully in a couple of weeks I can report back on that. So it's exciting that at least we'll be able to stream it. And I'd like to revisit the movie too.
Yeah. With the context of, because everything that I understood is that there are a lot of jokes that reference it.
Yes, absolutely. There's some stuff in the movie that I like immediately. I was like, man, if I had seen the show, this would hit so fucking hard. But even not seeing the show and understanding what they're doing, I'm like, this is incredible. So
yeah, everything I've heard is. And have you seen Black Bear yet?
No, I still have not watched it. Hopefully I will get to it soon.
Okay, all right. I was just curious, just because
probably gonna watch it before we go see Tony, because we've been doing this whole thing of like, we watch something like the weekend before we're going to see something. We'll watch something that kind of pertains, like we watched two Nolan movies before we went to go see The Odyssey, and it's been kind of fun way to like theme things, you know, that we're going to watch.
So. Exactly. Like Spider-Man, you're going to watch the Spider-Man films, and no. I completely get it. Okay. All right. Which, absolutely.
On that note, next week, we're talking about Spider-Man.
Yes. Yes, we are.
So, I can't freaking wait.
I cannot wait either. Cause then we can finally just put this,
the Jean Grey stuff
to rest, to bed, you know. And Frank's back. Back. I love it. Frank's back. Spider-Man.
Yeah, I haven't gotten enough of him this year. What I need is more of John Bernthal. I absolutely love John Bernthal.
My favorite thing he did this year is not even anything he did. It's the supercut. It's the let me tell you about Hulk Spider-Man. Let me tell you about Odysseus, Spider-Man. I just love it. But yes, so excited about this, and I really hope that Dustin Daniel Cretton.
I'm seeing it Thursday night. When are you getting to see it?
I'm seeing it Thursday.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
So maybe we can talk on Friday. Say,
maybe we can record on Friday. That would be great.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
Okay. Until then, go check out everything else we do over at xwingfiles.com, or you can read our written work over at Adam's website.
Yes, themovieowl.com, where we've got a ton of stuff that that's posting right now. A lot of content, like I think I was talking about last week or on Saturday. A few days ago the previous episode posted, I'm right in the middle of talking about Fantasia, which is a genre film fest. I've already got a bunch of reviews up about that. My review of Obsession, the 4K Obsession, is up. I'm hoping
we get to watch that this week too.
Yeah, that, like, I'm very curious to hear about what your thoughts are on that film. And then there's a bunch more 4K content that's going to be coming out. So, movieowl.com.
Yeah. And on that note, we'll see you guys next week.
See you guys next week. Star Wars, number 2 comics, number 3 Lord of the Rings and the Hobbit, number 4 Mario, number 5 Weird Al, number 6 Batman, number 7 Cal, number 8 Simpsons, number 9 TV, number 10 every single band that has stole all their MP3s, but before they all sold out, see it all together if you're with me now. Nerds,